This is Phil
Farron.
And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 271. I think. That's at least what I have written on my little piece of paper. I have the air blower going. Not air conditioning, just the air blower. And it's a little warm today. But, you know, we've got a long way to go before we're through with summer. So it can't be very hot right now because it's only 66 degrees out there. I don't think that's right. Yes. What is it? What is it? What is it? What is it? Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Oh. I've got one of those fingerprint scanners on my phone and it doesn't quite... Well, I've never used the Apple one, so I don't know how well the Apple one works. But sometimes, you know, we got to work at it. Oh, it says it's 76 degrees out there. Wow. I'm going to have to endure this for more than 20 more degrees. Woo! Anyways, it will be fine. Step at a time, step at a time. It's been a good week. Had a big presentation today with the executives. For World Missions at my major client. Did a presentation for them and, you know, let them know that the discovery document was ready and it was out there and blah, blah, blah. And that all seemed to go fine. Little bit of an interesting thing. It was a special executive committee meeting, so it was off-site, and all their wives were there, which I thought was cool. That was cool because it brings a different, completely different perspective. And these, obviously, are wives of people who have been involved in missions a long time. And so they very much see it from that perspective. And it's, you know, it was good to have them in the room. So that was fun. And the presentation went fine. And everybody seemed to understand what we were talking about and what we were trying to accomplish. And so now we're just going to wait for them to, you know, come to a decision as to how they want to move forward next. And then it was, you know, it's a fairly long presentation and, you know, of all the things we could do. And one of the executive committee member who's got a, you know, great sense of humor, he said, well, I only have one question after I was all done. He said, so what's the problem? I said, nothing. I can pack up and say, God bless you all and we're in good shape. So that was after I had identified 35 separate initiatives over things that we should apply our attention to. So anyways, you know, that all went fine. Puttering along on the book, I was actually able to put some real quality time on the cover this last weekend. I had mentioned that I was just going to hunker down on Friday and Saturday and work on the cover since my wife was going to be out of town. And it took about as long as I thought it was going to take. I expected it to take me about a week, which normally I put in 25 hours or so over the course of the week. 20 hours or so. And so I just compressed that and worked about 12 hours on it on 12 or 13 hours on it on Friday and worked about 12 hours on it on Saturday and got it done in one weekend. And then I worked on it some more on Sunday. But I also knew I had my granddaughter's fourth birthday was coming up. And so I knew I was going to lose Tuesday night. And so now I'm doing it. Hopefully the final read-through. Once I get the final read-through done, then I'll go ahead and get it laid out. Once I get it laid out, then it'll just be a matter of figuring out how many pages it's going to be, how thick it's going to be, you know, finishing out the cover, doing the wraparound cover for it. But that usually goes pretty fast. I can usually get that done, and once I know all the pieces, I usually can get that slapped together in, I don't know, 12 hours or so. It's not, you know, a couple of days. It's maybe 8 to 12 hours, and get that shipped off, and then get a proof in, and then order the beta copies, and then we're off to the races. So, I'm hoping that, you know, I should be able to get the beta copies mailed no later than July 1st. So that'll be good. I'm a little tired today. You know, it was a big day. There was much to do, and my voice is a little tired because I basically talked for, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes or so, just straight, doing the presentation, answering questions, all that kind of good stuff. So I'm a little, my eyes aren't crossed, I'm not that tired, but I'm feeling it today. But today, I get to go home, I get to read some more, and I get to spend the weekend working on my book, and that is a good thing. I'm really enjoying this series. This is just gonna be fun. Really enjoying this series. I enjoyed working on the cover. We're waiting for an outfit to come in for my granddaughter, because she's gonna be a little Bo Peep. So we're waiting for an outfit, kind of a little Edwardian Victorian outfit. We're not going all frou-frou with all the lace and, you know, petticoats and all that kind of junk. We're kind of going more Edwardian Victorian type of outfit. You know, with one of those little dust mop hats. Mop cap, they're called. So it should be fun. It should be a lot of fun. Let's see. And when that comes in, then we'll shoot her and then drop her into the cover. And I've got to, you know, finish tonalizing, doing the color tone on the cover. And once that's all gets done, then I'm ready to go. By that time, hopefully the read-throughs will be done. So it'll be interesting. It'll be fun to see. Already starting to work through the next book, you know, thinking about where I need to start, what I need to accomplish, what are people expecting, because that's a big thing in storytelling. You know, you always have to try to be aware of what do people expect to happen next, and even if you're going to go in a completely different direction, you at least need to bridge them over. One of the things about the 7th season of Doctor Who that was kind of a distraction for me, the second part of the 7th season, once they finally said fond farewell to Rory and Amy, and they brought in Clara, the new girl. I really liked how they were writing Clara, but they never solved an outstanding issue, and that issue was, where is the doctor's wife, Riversong. Where is she? She just kind of disappeared, and now he's taking up with this young girl. Well, she had come to the end of her cycle as well, but there wasn't a big, definite ta-da, done. So that kind of expectation, when the reader is looking or the viewer is looking for that kind of expectation, you can kind of get tripped up. You know in your own mind where things are going, but if there's an expectation they're going someplace else, you have to address that. So I've been thinking about, okay, where do people expect this to go? What will be a satisfying beginning for the next book to tie it together to the first book? So I'm working on that. Still, I really have no idea exactly what's going to happen in the second book, but I know what I want to accomplish in the second book. And knowing that then will, you know, lead me through the hit points of where I need to be. So I just turned up the air a little bit because at least I can blow in some cold from outside or some 72 degree weather from outside. Anyways, this week, C.S. Lewis. It's always good to talk about C.S. Lewis. He's good. Had some good conversations with friends this week. I actually talked to a buddy about this passage this morning because I think it has some good things to say, and one in particular that is just at the end of this essay, but, you know, there's some other good things to say in the essay as well, and things that definitely, excuse me, definitely I agree with. And so, the essay, a friend of actually pushed it to me, and as a YouTube video that someone was reading, and it was interesting, and so then I went and looked at the original. And it's actually an essay out of C.S. Lewis's book, God in the Dock. And the dock, D-O-C-K, in this case, I think, refers to a courtroom where the accused sits in the dock and listens to the testimony against him or her. And in this series of essays, C.S. Lewis is talking about theology and ethics. And one of those essays is called Man or Rabbit. And I thought it was really good. It starts off on a completely different topic, but then when he winds it all around, he gets to the point that I really want to talk about, that I was even able to use last night to get myself focused on what I needed to do at that moment. Because last night we were closing for the month, so that's a big deal. We were actually closing a day later than normal. That could be a big deal if something went wrong. I knew I had this big meeting coming up today, because through all those things, you're, you know, hoping to do a good job, hoping everything's going to be fine. Oh, speaking of which, just before I went off to this meeting, it's really fascinating how the Lord works. Because just before I went off to this meeting, I popped my head into the buddy that I work with on the contributor side. He supports the contribution side, and then I help where I need to, since I help build the system. And my standard saying to him is, all quiet on the Western Front, or all quiet on the Eastern Front. And so just before I was heading to my meeting, in fact, I was walking out the door, I saw him kind of squinting at his screen, so I leaned in my head and said, all quiet on the Eastern Front? And he went, yeah. He said, they're having some trouble balancing. Uh-oh. So I, you know, ducked in there, which we have data control reports that balance everything to the penny every night. But sometimes they balance other ways that the data control reports don't do, which, you know, we might need to update the data control reports. And so I ducked in, and we were looking at some stuff, and it concerned what we call deputational offerings. And this is the way they balance every month, and we were off by $21,000. And so the guy who does the balancing wrote and said, I'm off by $21,000. Any ideas? What? And he showed us his figures. And so we were looking at stuff, and we were just literally trying this, trying that. And I said, well, let's look here and look in this and try this. And, you know, it came up, we did a sum on this stuff, and it came up to exactly the amount he was off. And we're like, whoa, wait a minute, hold it. And I thought for sure I was just going to have to leave it with my friend and let him struggle through it. But all of a sudden, we were just dinking around, and bang, it comes up, and it's the right amount we're off by, down to the penny. Like, hold it, that must be it, what is that? And then we realized what had happened, that we had put through a new kind of batch this last month. And while everything was correct, it affected the type of balancing that they were doing. And I was so grateful we had found that, because that was just one less thing I would have, you know, binging around in the back of my mind while I was trying to give my presentation. So I was just like, yes, yay, thank you, Jesus, moving forward. But anyways, so this thought that's at the end of this essay that C.S. Lewis is doing is something that I've been pondering since my buddy showed me this particular essay and I listened to it. But it was something that I was able to put into practice last night. And when I shared it with a friend this morning, he felt like it was something that he could definitely use and put into practice. So in this Man or Rabbit essay, what C.S. Lewis is supposedly talking about is the question, can't you live a good life without believing in Christianity? And he said, that's a question I've been asked to write on. And he said, when I hear someone who is asking that question, he said, it sounds like what the person is really saying is, I don't care whether Christianity is in fact true or not. I'm not interested in finding out whether the real universe is more like what the Christians say is leading or what the materialists say. All I'm interested in is leading a good life. I'm going to choose beliefs not because I think them true, but because I find them helpful. And frankly, C.S. Lewis's reaction is to this is, what are you talking about? You know, one of the most basic things that we have as human beings is this desire to figure out what's true. And Christianity makes all kinds of claims about the world, and either they're true or they're not true. And if they're true, they're going to modify your behavior. He says, I just don't believe that we've really lost this desire to know the truth. In his words, more probably, foolish preachers, by always telling you how much Christianity will help you and how good it is for society, have actually led you to forget that Christianity is not a patent medicine. Christianity claims to give an account of the facts. And it's up to you to decide whether or not you believe those facts are true. C.S. Lewis said, if Christianity is untrue, then no honest man will want to believe it, however helpful it might be. And if it is true, every honest man will want to believe it, even if it gives him no help at all. And I thought that's very, very good. He said, if Christianity happens to be true, then it is quite impossible that those who know this truth and those who don't will be equally well equipped for leading a good life. Okay, so that's true. He goes through a bunch of other stuff that's good. And he gives some really good rock solid examples of the differences between just coming at things from a materialist perspective and coming at things from a Christian perspective. But he says, you know, where the materialist would simply ask about a proposed action, will it increase the happiness of the majority? The Christian might have to say, even if it does increase the happiness of the majority, we can't do it. It is unjust. So that was pretty interesting. And then, as C.S. Lewis always does, he brought it around very personal, and he said, the question before us is not, can someone lead a good life without Christianity? The question is, can I? And he said, there certainly have been good men who have not been Christians. But these men, according to C.S. Lewis, were in a state of honest ignorance or honest error. And C.S. Lewis says, I believe and hope that the skill and mercy of God would remedy these evils of their ignorance left to itself, which would naturally produce for them both whom they... Okay, so, and C.S. Lewis is saying that he thinks that God will work in those circumstances when people are honestly ignorant or honestly in error. He said, but this guy who's asking this question isn't in that position, which is an interesting way to put it. He said, if he hadn't heard of Christianity, he would not be asking the question. If, having heard of it and seriously considered, he had decided that it was untrue, then once more he would not be asking the question. The man who asked this question has heard of Christianity and is by no means certain that it is not true. He's really asking, do I need to be bothered with this? Mayn't I just evade the issue, let sleeping dogs lie, and get on with being good? Aren't good intentions enough to keep me safe and blameless without knocking at that dreadful door and making sure whether there is or isn't someone inside? Now, this is where he starts to get some interesting observations. He said, we do not need to inquire whether God will punish him for his cowardness and laziness. They will punish themselves. The man is shirking. He is deliberately trying not to know whether Christianity is true or false because he foresees endless trouble if it should turn out to be true. He is like a man who deliberately forgets to look at the notice board, because if he did, he might find his name down for some unpleasant duty. He is like the man who won't look at his bank account because he's afraid of what he might find there. He is like a man who won't go to the doctor when he feels a mysterious pain because he is afraid of what the doctor might tell him. C.S. Lewis very accurately observes that dishonesty will spread through all his thoughts and actions, a certain shiftiness, a vague worry in the background, a blunting of his whole mental image will result. And I thought, absolutely true. And in my parlance, what you're doing is, if you're listening to the voice of the flesh is just going to start pervading everything in your life. It's just going to wrap its arms around everything and influence everything. If you have a feeling that something is true, if you're hearing that voice of God within you, and yet you're just choosing to ignore it, then the flesh really gets a foothold and it just keeps working on you. Let me get my mail. So I thought that was all very good. And then C.S. Lewis goes on to say, you may not be certain whether or not you ought to be a Christian, but you do know you ought to be a man and not an ostrich hiding its head in the sand. That was really good. But still, for intellectual honor has sunk very low in our age, I hear someone whimpering on with his question. Will it help me? Will it make me happy? Do you really think I'd be better if I became a Christian? He says, well, if you must have it, my answer is yes. But I don't like giving that answer at this stage. Here is a door behind which, according to some people, lies the secret of the universe. Whether that's true or it isn't. And if it isn't, then what the door really conceals is simply the greatest fraud, the most colossal sell on record. Isn't it obvious that it is the job of every man, that is a man and not a rabbit, to either try to find out which, and then to devote his full energies either to serving this tremendous secret or exposing and destroying this gigantic humbug? That's very good. I like that. Because it does focus people to stop kind of mealy-mouthing around about what they believe in Christianity and take the issue head on. He says, you know, he does believe that Christianity will do you good. He said, and the first bit of good it will do you is to hammer into your head, and you won't enjoy that the fact that what you have hitherto called good, all that about leading a decent life and being kind, isn't quite the magnificent and all-important affair you supposed. It will teach you that it, in fact, you can't be good, not for 24 hours, in your own moral efforts, and then it will teach you that even if you were, you still wouldn't have achieved the purpose for which you were created. And this, for me, is where it starts turning. He says, morality is not the end of life. The people who keep on asking if they can't live a decent life without Christ don't know what life is about. If they did, they would know that a decent life is mere machinery compared with the thing we men are really made for. Morality is indispensable, but the divine life, which gives us to itself and calls us to be gods, intends for us something in which morality will be swallowed up. We are to be remade. And that was a nice point. That's really when you look beyond just the experience of this life, what is this life supposed to be leading us toward, and what it is to be leading us toward, since we are eternal and Jesus himself called us gods, affirmed the verse that said, ye are not gods. I mean, we are eternal beings made in his likeness. He says, we are to be remade, C.S. Lewis does. All the rabbit in us is to disappear, the worried, conscientious, ethical rabbit, as well as the cowardly, sensual rabbit. We shall bleed and squeal as the handfuls of fur come out, and then, surprisingly, we shall find underneath it all a thing we have never yet imagined, a real man, an ageless God, a son of God, strong, radiant, wise, beautiful, and drenched in joy. And I thought, whoa, hey, there you go. That's good. That's what I was using last night, you know, when I had all this stuff that was going on and I was having to sit there and wait to see if it was actually going to clear and everything was going to be okay. And, you know, it just started working on me. And I thought, okay, wait, stop, just stop, just stop. Understand that this is a staging area. And then what is going to be revealed in me is that I am going to be a real man, an ageless God, a son of God, strong, radiant, wise, beautiful, and drenched in joy. And I should start living like that now. And say, you know what? Either it's going to balance or it's not going to balance. And me thinking about it balancing isn't going to make any difference in the world. So I just need to get on with what I need to get on with. And then when time comes, I'll see if it balances. And great if it does. If it doesn't, I'll see what we need to do to fix it, period. And that actually played itself out today. It appeared to balance, and then all of a sudden there was this extra balancing that was done. And so I walked in. I could have said, you know what? I'm late for a meeting. I'm leaving now. Don't bother with me this now. I just told my buddy, I said, hey, well, let's just look at it for a minute, see what we can find out. And then we're looking at it, and we're not making any progress, and we can't figure out what in the world is going on. And then we just stumble into this thing, and bang, there it is. And it's like, woo-hoo! Thank you, Jesus. You know. He goes on to say, and I love this too, quoting from Scripture, when that part which is perfect is come, then that which is in part will be done away with. The idea of reaching a good life without Christ is based on a double error. First, we cannot do it. And secondly, in setting up a good life as our final goal, we have missed the very point of our existence. This is really good. Morality is a mountain which we cannot climb by our own efforts, and if we could, we would only perish in the ice and unbreathable air of the summit, lacking those wings with which the rest of the journey has to be accomplished. For it is from there that the real ascent begins. The ropes and axes are done away, and the rest is a matter of flying. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.